people who are under attack don't respond rationally. Like, if I so come key. With an attack, I shouldn't expect anyone to respond well. Mm. Right?
I almost said this in my message, but I really didn't have time for it. But I think one good gauge to that is if you're excited to have this conversation with someone else, you probably need to go back to week one.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of his spirit, do better. So together, we can be a little better. Welcome back to the A Little Better podcast. I'm Callum and I'm joined with Matt Soans and Drew Karshner. And we are in our second week of talking about conflict. Yay! last week, I would encourage you to listen back. That we talked a lot about like the self and kind of the inner workings or our side of conflict, taking the log out of our own eye, that kind of a thing. And this week we're going to get really practical. But before we dive in, we always love to hear from you. So if you have any thoughts or questions, would you email us at podcast@northridgerochester.com? We're also doing a survey because we want to help make this podcast as good as we can make it. And so we have a survey that we'd love for you to fill out. That's going to be in the show notes. But either way, we'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts, questions, please reach out. They actually directly go to my inbox, so be kind.
or don't.
Or don't, yeah. All right, so you're in the middle of a meeting, and your phone pings. You open it up, and it's not just like one scroll. It's two scrolls. It's three scrolls of people.
There's already conflict.
of someone that's like, just exploded on you. And then your heartbeat starts to rise, your blood starts to boil, and your inner lawyer is like activated into creating the best rebuttal to adjudicate the case that you are going to win. And that's conflict. There's that tension that arises in the relationship, whether it comes from you or because of you or from someone else, we got to deal with it. And I'd love to know, it doesn't have to be in that situation, guys, but I'd love to know from you guys at the offset, what's been the most helpful tool for you personally to help you navigate, whether it was a situation like that or a conflict that you've had in your marriage or a friend, roommate, you name it. What's been the most helpful tool for you?
I can go first, yeah. I think one of the things that I learned that I found really helpful is a little acronym, and I love these acronyms, so I apologize in advance.
Classic
it's
American.
True. get used to acronyms.
is CPR. So to help us figure out what is the actual problem that we're talking about, is it content, is it a pattern, or is it a relationship problem? And typically that's a progression. Right. So CPR, is it like I was just offended by this one thing that somebody did? Or is it now there's been a pattern of this person doing the same type of thing over and over again? Or is it the point that I can't trust this person anymore? There's a relationship problem that we have now that we need to talk about. And so just helping me as I'm thinking about a conflict and addressing it with someone, get to the point of understanding, what kind of conversation do I need to have? Is this just, I need to talk about that thing you did? Or is it, I need to talk about how, you know, I keep experiencing this over and over again? Or is it, I need to talk about like, hey, like, I'm not sure I can trust you because of X.
And it's a progressive thing, right?
Yeah,
it starts off like, it doesn't always go to the relationship where it's like, you've broken trust. Sometimes it can jump right there, but over time, it can, the content becomes a pattern that then becomes a trust issue, is what you're saying.
And part of how that's helped me is that I am a natural avoider. So I don't want to have to engage the conversation. I will just try to sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away. But recognizing that if you don't address it when it's a content issue, it can quickly become a pattern issue. And if you don't address it, especially when it's a pattern, then it will become a relationship issue. So that has helped me recognize, like, I need to speak up more in these situations where I feel hurt or, you know, my peace has been taken away, because otherwise it's going to become a relationship problem.
I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But Drew, what about you?
I don't even know if this is a tool, but again, this is like super churchy, but like, I think there's two P's. Whenever conflict arises, there's two P's that I cling to, even though sometimes I forget them, and they go hand in hand. One leads to the other. So prayer and patience.
Okay.
Like obviously I mentioned in my message, like, hey, one of the best things you can do when you feel conflict is to pray.
Yep.
But what I think is so connected to conflict and why we're not good at handling conflict is because we're not patient people. And I think of that example, like, you know, my natural reaction is like, I'm going to respond to this. Mm-hmm. My Holy Spirit reaction is like, you need to pause and be patient before you respond to this. And I think, mm-hmm. Patience is just one of the Proverbs. I forget exactly how it said it. I know the end. I forget. There's patience in there. It says to one whose glory is overlook offense. But there's this idea of, in order to do that, there's patience involved. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly. It's Proverbs 19 something. But like, I just think patience is a tool, a fruit of the Spirit that we desperately need in handling. We don't have to. I think we feel like we have to rush to solve. Like he says, you know, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace. But sometimes peace takes a while. It's not just like, oh, yeah, well, let's get back to peace. It's, I got to be patient in the journey. And so.
That's good. Yeah. So it's not just patience kind of in responding to it, but it's in the process.
Yeah.
There's another P for you. But it makes me think of the story when Jesus was confronted by the Pharisees who caught the woman in adultery. And there's this moment where it's like, it's super intense. And he's just like right drawing in the dirt. And I can imagine them just being like, what is he doing? And in that moment, he's just de-escalating the situation as they're trying to catch him in an act. And he's just being patient.
Yeah.
And then it's like that line of, he who's without sin cast the first stone. Mm-hmm. And I think that. That's a good point.
I think when in your sermon you talked about like, hey, don't try to address conflict when your emotions are high, right? You're not at your best. Nope. So like, let's cool it down. And I think there's sometimes some tension for us because like you talked about the passage, don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. And this is one of the things we talked about in our community group is like, sometimes we can't address our conflict. We can't resolve it all. Like, sometimes you need to go to sleep and sleep on it, right?
Well, the passage doesn't say, it says, don't let the sun go down while you're still angry.
Exactly.
It doesn't say, you have to resolve the conflict.
Exactly.
Or you're never going to sleep. Like, some of us would never literally sleep. You know what I mean? Like,
that's right.
It just calm your anger down, right?
Right.
Like,
so, and that's about an internal thing for me. Yes. That's not about making the relationship whole before I go to sleep.
Yep.
That's about, like, I need to let go of my anger. Yeah. And go to sleep.
Yes.
I don't need to hold on to my anger before I go to sleep.
Bro, there's many years Ashley and I interpreted that passage so wrong. And we would literally fight all night because we'd be like, we have to resolve this. The Bible says don't let the sun go down in your anger. So we would be up, it'd be 3 a.m.
Even
like,
though the sun is already down.
Yes, exactly. Like, we've already failed, but let's keep going. And like, anyway. Yeah.
Handling conflict is always like, it feels like high stakes. And even last week we talked about how we can be, that anger can trigger, I know some people don't like that word, but it can trigger a response within us that makes it very hard to be rational, which is why I think it makes sense to remember, be patient, pray in the patience, so that we can actually approach conflict rationally. As we talked before, the emotional part of our brain and a rational part of the brain kind of disconnects, unfortunately. And so when we're not to say that we disregard our emotions, but understand our emotions, so that we can actually communicate well, like you're saying, CPR, content, pattern, relationship. So there was four things in your message, Drew, that I want to dig deeper in on. The first one, when it comes to something is happening in a relationship and it's stolen peace, the first thing is share your concern. I'd love to dig into this a little bit more. Matt, maybe you can expand on this a little bit more, but like, how do we define our concern? You mentioned CPR. What else can help us a little bit more with that?
Yeah, you're talking about like how complex our emotions are. And sometimes, especially when, you know, I've been hurt and there's just like a complex web of like issues that we have to, in order, if we're going to address conflict well with somebody, we've got to be able to unbundle that and identify what is the real problem that I need to address. And CPR can help us understand what that is. But until I can define the problem in a sentence, I'm not ready to talk about it with somebody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Drew talked about, like, you don't send the "we need to talk" text, right? Because then anxiety is through the roof. So, but what do you say? Well, if I can define the problem in a sentence, then I can say, hey, we need to talk about X because I want to be at peace in our relationship, right? You're clearly stating the goal is to be at peace. I'm not trying to win. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to be humble and curious so that we can be at peace.
Yeah. I think, you know, with share your concern is the most important step, not because it's super like crazy. It's because it's the first step. And most people never get to step two because they blow step one, mm-hmm. right? And I think how you share your concern is so important, mm-hmm. right? We say a lot around here, approach trumps content, right? So you have to understand your content. But if you have your one-liner done perfect, but you say it really poorly, or you don't create a safe environment, or the way you approach it is bad, no one's going to hear it, right?
Yeah.
And I just think there's so much significance to how you approach that first step. I think we talked about this in pre-preach a little bit. Allowing the person, even before you share your concern, part of sharing your concern is helping people understand, like, you're not here to attack them.
Yep.
You're not here to just call out their problems. Ultimately, your goal for sharing the concern is so you can achieve peace. And when you communicate that in a clear, loving way, it diffuses what you're going to say.
Yeah. One of the things that, I think, Matt, you taught us this, taught our staff this, was that it's probably been one of the most profound things that stuck with me ever since, was the conflict is the gap between expectation and experience. And when we're able to articulate, is it talking about sharing your concern, when you're able to say, even if you're prepping for a conversation, my expectation was this, I expected this to happen, and what I experienced was not that, and there was a gap. You talk in your message about, like, overlooking offense. Maybe sometimes you're just like, well, there must be a reasonable way that that happened, and there's a gap and I'll overlook it. Or like Carly texted me literally yesterday afternoon. She was frustrated at me that I hadn't done the dishes. There was an expectation that she felt like she had communicated to me, and her experience was that I didn't do it. So she brought that to me. I found that just so helpful, because I think it helps us not to simply jump back to the content from last week, but understand maybe my expectation is irrational or not fair. Maybe I didn't even communicate the expectation in the first place. Like, was the expectation clear on you from me? And the reason why there's a gap in what I experienced is because I actually didn't communicate to you what that was. And that for me has been so helpful. As Carly and I have talked about just different things that come up, like, this is what I experienced. Was that even asking, you say later, like, there's curiosity of asking, was that expectation clear for you? I think would be so, so helpful.
I think too, when we talk about that first step, which is really the second step, right? Pray is first, and then share your concern when you're actually having the conversation. When you're sharing your concern, sometimes we don't even do that first. We often want to just jump to how the person made us feel, right? And which is the interpretation piece, which is the next step, right? So if we don't start with our observations, hey, this is what happened. I expected this thing. I experienced this thing. And there's a gap. Help me understand what happened in between there. Even if it's simple things like, hey, you said you would do the dishes and the dishes aren't done. What happened? And we can choose how we're going to fill that gap. Like, I'm going to either choose suspicion, well, you're just lazy, or I'm going to choose trust, well, something must have came up. I hope he's okay.
Right.
Right.
I think there's a side too of, like, when you share your concern, I think one thing we never do is, like, put yourself in the shoes of the person who's going to receive it.
Yep.
Right. Because all throughout our lives, we are going to be on both ends of this conversation. We're going to be on the end of sharing a concern, and we're going to be the person who is receiving the concern. And one thing that I love to do is like, okay, when I'm talking to my wife or a coworker, or whoever, how would I want to receive this concern, right? Yep. How would I want to feel, and what would I want myself to feel if someone was addressing this to me? I think we get so consumed with, like you said, we want to jump to how it hurt us or how we felt. We want to communicate that so clearly that I think we forget that there's other feelings involved. There's mm-hmm. other emotions involved. And so we have to understand when I'm sharing concern, how do I want this person to perceive me the way I'm communicating?
Yeah. I was just going to say, this is all under the banner. We're trying to pursue peace together. Everyone wants to be at peace. Yep. So what were you going to say, Matt?
And that's what you're just saying, Drew, is a big part of establishing safety, right? Because if I just come at you with like, hey, you didn't do the dishes, it can feel like an attack, right? And people who are under attack don't respond rationally.
That's right.
So
say that again.
People who are under attack don't respond rationally. Like if I so come with an attack, I shouldn't expect anyone to respond well, right?
I almost said this in my message, but I really didn't have time for it. But I think one good gauge to that is if you're excited to have this conversation with someone else, you probably need to go back to week one, right? If you can't wait to be like, hey, you know what? They need to hear this. Like, you're in the wrong posture to share the concern, right? Like, there's no safety there. It's like, woohoo, I can't wait to point out their flaws.
And a big part, I think, of establishing safety is to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes, like you're saying, and even ask yourself, how might they misunderstand or misinterpret what I'm trying to communicate in a negative way, right? So, and to be able to upfront, like you might feel like you're like just a caveat upon caveat at the beginning, but like I'm not trying to communicate that whatever it is that they might misinterpret.
Yep.
So the first part was share your concern. The second part is how has it impacted you, which feels really, no pun intended, conflict with what you're saying of safety. Is like all of a sudden emotion or how we react to it is in conflict. We are trying to create safety for the other person, but you're also saying this is how it affected me. How do we do that well? Mm-hmm.
I think caveats are great. Like, I want you to understand, here's the gap. Here's what I experienced in that gap. And I think steps 2 and 3 should come almost together, right?
Where, so step three is
to ask for clarity. So like, before you like, you hurt me, you crushed me, like express how you received that, but also leave a little bit of room in how it impacted you for you to be wrong in your interpretation.
Yep. Like, right? I said, like our expectation might not have been clear in the
exactly
first.
And I think that's another step where we get so off base is we think like the way we saw is the only way it could have been. So many times there is a lack of clarity or a lack of motive, especially in our digital world. So much of our communication is digital or through memes or, you know, all these things that like you can at some level misinterpret, be hurt, and be like, wow, that person didn't even mean it the way I took it.
Mm-hmm. Carly did send me a meme. What, funny you say that, in the text message she sent me yesterday. And it was getting good fun. I'm not throwing under a bus, but it's just funny that you say that. It was accompanied with a meme.
And I think just to address that a little bit further, like in our relationships, we want to be able to have openness, and we want to love and experience love. And so to have, it's so important. We talked about in your sermon about listening, so important that we feel understood. And when I'm hurt, I'm longing to be understood in my hurt. Mm. And so there, if I feel like I have to address this conflict, that's part of it, is being able to just expose, hey, this is what happened. This is how it made me feel. And if you're my brother or you're, you know, my wife, you want to know how I felt about something that you did. So because you don't want me to feel bad, you don't, I mean, maybe you were trying to hurt me, in which case that's a different conversation. But typically people don't intend to hurt us most of the time. especially in our close relationships where there's minor conflicts. Now, sometimes people do try to hurt us,
yeah.
and then we're having a different conversation. But most of the time, the conflicts that I experience are people aren't trying to hurt me, but I was hurt. And so, yeah.
If you're wondering right now, oh, this is really easy. This we will get to some of the things. trust
if you're
me.
Wondering that, man, wow.
One of the things that you mentioned in your message too, which I encourage you to go and listen back to the message, you talked about like bringing others involved. I'd love to know from you guys of what there. I think there's a fine line between bringing people in and seeking counsel and gossiping, even to the point of like slander or malice.
Yeah.
That's quite a wide range. How do we navigate bringing in wise counselors into a situation? Or Matthew 18, you go together to talk to someone. How do we navigate that between ganging up on someone, showing malice, etc.?
I mean, this is really difficult because I think we become so blinded to our motives.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is where your relationship with God is so important. This is where week one is so important because you got to ask God, like, search me, right? Like, reveal to me, God, am I doing this because I just want, I want other people to see my side. And so like, you got to be very in tune with your motives. Mm. And you have to allow the Holy Spirit to convict you of wrong motives. The point of bringing somebody else in, again, is not to win the argument. It's to achieve peace. Mm. Again, that goal just has to keep echoing in our mind. But there are times where conflict gets to a point where you Ashley and I, we've been there before, where you just... You try to have the conversation, you pause, you rest, and you just keep circling. You keep circling. There's no agreement. You're not going mm-hmm. anywhere. And I think that's where you can bring other people in. But I think you have to be careful. Like, there's times where you're like, hey, I got to respond to this text message that someone sent me. And it's more about you want people to see how nasty this person is than getting yeah. wisdom from me. And again, mm-hmm. I think, man, understanding your motives is really important.
Good point.
Yeah. And if the person that you want to talk to isn't part of the problem and they're not part of the solution, then you shouldn't talk to them. That's right? So true.
How would you articulate that, like the difference between
I mean, if they're part of the problem, meaning they were involved in the situation somehow, sure. then it makes sense to, and like they should be involved in the solution that as makes well, sense. Right?
But what do you mean by someone's part of the solution?
So I think that's the harder one, right? Because you do want wise counsel, like, help me navigate this situation. Now, if somebody is like in a position of a mature mentor to you, then it makes sense that you would approach them. But if they are a friend who's just going to agree with you,
that's a good point. That's
then
so good.
I think that's the thing, right? You want a non-biased person. And when I say biased, I don't mean like they can't be your friend, but someone who will be willing enough to say you're actually wrong mm-hmm. in this yep. case, right?
Yep.
I would love to turn. So the third step was ask for clarity. We've kind of hit on that. And the last step is find peace in a relationship. But before we get there, I think the final stage of finding peace in a relationship can often come with many bends in the road. Hmm. I'll put it that way. And there's a number of things. This goes back to the session that you did, Matt. And I'd love to go through. There's six things. The first thing is switch tracking. Explain what switch tracking is. And how do we handle switch tracking?
Switch tracking, yeah. It just basically means a different conversation comes up. You know, you're having a conversation about, hey, I expect you to do the dishes and you didn't. And if the response is like, you never seem to appreciate how hard I work around here, right? Then you've got two different conversations going on, right? So you've got a content issue and then you've got a relationship issue. Mm-hmm. And that's typically what happens. Like, you know, somebody will feel attacked and then they'll elevate to a relationship issue and it's really a separate topic. And sometimes because we're such emotional creatures, like we don't even realize that we've got different topics. And so we're just on two different tracks talking about two different things at the same time.
So when that comes up, what do we do?
The best thing to do if you can emotionally step back is to just signpost the two topics. Like, hey, that's a really important thing. We need to address that. And typically, if it's a relationship thing that comes up, you probably want to address that one first.
Yeah.
But sometimes you say, hey, we've got two topics here. Let's address this one first and we can come back to this. Or which one do you want to address first? We should talk about them both. But just recognizing that there's two different things is the biggest step in when you got
it. One thing Ashley and I have done to avoid switch tracking is like when someone is addressing an issue, we have this rule. Now, I will be openly and honest with you. Sometimes we break the rule. But the rule is simple. Like if I'm bringing an issue to Ashley or she's bringing an issue to me, we have this rule, like we're not allowed to talk about another issue. Mm-hmm. Like the rule is like, hey, mm-hmm. we are lasered in on this. And after this is resolved or we had a conversation, mm-hmm. we can then shift to another one.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way. It's like you said, when yep. you feel attacked, people don't respond rationally. And when you're not rational, you forget the rules.
And it becomes it's the inner lawyer that is wanting to win the yeah. case by any means necessary.
Yes. Yep.
The second thing is eruption. This is kind of an explosion of like frustration, rage, and anger. What do we do when someone kind of erupts back at you?
Give them a right hook.
We're not condoning violence.
Yeah. I mean, if there is violence, you just get out. Yeah. You know, you're just out of there. But I think a lot of these things, so whether it's an eruption of emotion that's aggressive or whether it's like a fountain of tears, when big emotions come up, you need to like just address the big emotion and de-escalate in some way. Yeah. So you address like, hey, we're both a little bit tense. Let's take a minute and pause, right? So if it's big emotions, if there's aggression, if there's anger,
it goes back to like the sleep on it thing. Like yeah, sleep, like get some rest, let the emotions.
Sometimes you just need to pause. Like, hey, I need a 10-minute break.
Yeah,
you know, even if it's the other person that's angry, right?
Yeah,
you just need a break, and that's okay. Or if depending on the relationship, it may be a really great opportunity to say like, hey, this is really hard for both of us. Let's pray together.
It's very right? good.
Not all situations.
Nothing will de-escalate something like saying, let's pray together.
Yeah. And sometimes that you can't do that all the time. Right? That can backfire on you, especially with an angry person.
It's like, oh, I'm holier than thou.
Yeah.
Let me pray for you.
Can feel passive aggressive.
Yeah. So, like, sometimes you just have to pray internally. But, anyway, so like some sort of pause if there's anger. When there's tears, just like acknowledging the emotion and saying like, hey, we need to talk about this, but it's okay if you need some time.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the third thing on there is the fountain of emotion. So tears or vulnerability is a kind of a way of emotion. The fourth thing is withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal when someone, maybe you want to withdraw, you kind of said you kind of tend to avoid, yeah. but let's say for the other person and you're trying to address a conflict and they're withdrawing, how do we deal with that?
I think in the same way, you just address it. And it's particularly with a withdrawal, you have to name it. Like, hey, it seems like you're shutting down. You're starting to get one word answers. You're not getting eye contact. It's just like, person's not there anymore.
Yep.
Like you can't have a conversation mm-hmm. until you address the withdrawal. Like, hey, it seems like this is really hard for you. What's going on inside? Can you tell me about what you're feeling right now? And so you've got to, that's a switch track in a different way.
Yep.
And it's one that you have to address directly. Otherwise the conversation doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. And I think there's like in the withdrawal, one thing I've learned is like, hey, sometimes people are withdrawing because they can't have the conversation right now. Deadlines are good with that too. Like, hey, mm-hmm. I understand you don't want to talk right now. That's okay. I respect that. Please let me know. Please let me know. Like, hey, can we, you almost set a time frame. Like, yep. hey, take some space. Let's talk tomorrow at this time. But yep. like, I think one mistake people make is they just let the person withdraw. Oh, they'll come back to me when they're ready. And they don't often do. Yeah.
This was huge early on in Carly and I's marriage where I wanted to deal with conflict. It, to a point where that probably wasn't healthy because like I had gone through a relationship where I got the text where it was like, we need to talk without anything. And so I would just for the rest of the day, waiting until after work to have this intense conversation. So whenever there was tension in a relationship mm-hmm. with me and Carly, I was always like, we need to deal with this. That was an overreaction on my part. But I remember we had a discussion about this where she wasn't ready to talk. Now, I knew something was wrong. And so I go home and I'm like, hey, what's up? And she was like, nothing. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. You're not okay. Yep. And she would keep saying, no, I'm fine. Yep. I mean, if anyone says they're fine, they're probably not fine. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to just avoid the question, just don't say you're fine. Just use, I'm good. Like, I'm not trying to teach people to avoid. But we had to get to the point because for me, by her saying, I'm fine, nothing's wrong, I was like, you're lying to me. Mm. Mm. Something is clearly wrong. And you're basically telling me that what I see is true is not. You're lying to me. A day or whatever later, she then comes to me. It's like, you lied to me. You said you were fine and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Something really helped with us when we were like, okay, if you're not ready to talk, you just tell me.
Yeah.
I'm working through. I don't fully know what's going on right now. I don't know how to articulate my concern. Mm. Yep. I need some time. Cool. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Belinda and I are the opposite, right? So I'm the one who wants to avoid it. And in a lot of ways, I avoid so much that I don't even allow myself to recognize that I have something that's wrong. Mm. So sometimes when I'm struggling internally or there's tension for me, so it might even not be with my wife. It might be something totally different. She'll notice that there's something wrong. I have no idea. Mm. Right? So she'll say, hey, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. He's like, no, you're not. Yeah. Right? You know, and it's that kind of thing. But I haven't even gotten to a point where I can recognize that there's a problem that I need to address.
Or sometimes for me, I'm the same way, Matt. I'm you in that situation. I'm processing, is this something I need to talk about?
Sure.
Like, how much did this really bother me? And I'm not really sure. And so my wife is like the aggressive one. She's like, she can see it. She's like, something's wrong. You're mad at me. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, I'm not. I don't know. Baby, what? Like,
you can just see when there's a lack of maturity and grace to allow someone in their time to be able to process their emotion or process what's going on. Mm. It's just not going to be a helpful, rational, productive.
You can actually create a conflict that might not exist. Right. And yeah.
The fifth thing, blame shifting. This sounds an awful lot like switch tracking, but it's just transferring the blame. Talk about blame shifting. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, so Proverbs he talks about basically when you confront a wise person, they point the finger at themselves, right? When you confront a fool, they, you know, just point the finger at everybody else. So,
ouch.
this is what it says. And so, sometimes when you're engaging somebody who's a blame shifter, and I think this is especially true in like a working context or something like that, you really have to try to turn the conversation to focus on solutions. So, okay, I know you felt like that wasn't your fault. Let's figure out how to move forward together, right? So what can we do, even if it wasn't your fault? You were late to the meeting. It wasn't your fault. What do we do to prevent this from happening in the future? Right. Or, you know, whatever it is. So like you, so, and you know, same thing with the dishes and your wife, like, what happened? Well, it was outside of my control. Okay. But you could have at least communicated with me about it. Mm-hmm. Trying to turn the conversation with a blame shifter to focus on solutions, 'cause they're going to want to keep defending themselves. Mm. And you can just step over that.
I want to hit something that, particularly in a work context, has really helped me, is the term in the loop. Mm-hmm. Particularly with a previous boss, it was like, I was looking for more autonomy and leadership, like trust. And he was like, it felt kind of micromanaged. He wanted to make sure things were done. And there's just tension there.
Yeah.
And what really helped, so whether in a work or a home friendship thing, is being able to communicate with people. Hey, I just want to keep you in the loop. Yep. I understand we had this conversation. There's an expectation that I'm not able to meet.
Yep.
So it's not just like covering up the lack of expectation, but it's addressing that there is going to be a gap, and you fill that gap of that we're saying at the beginning of between expectation and experience, that trust is not filled with suspicion, it's filled with trust instead.
Yep.
The last one is a sorry spiral. When explain the sorry spiral.
Yeah, this is what, like, we all know people who can get really negative on themselves. And so you may have a situation where you're bringing a conflict situation to somebody and you're saying, hey, this really hurt me. And then that it just becomes this like, oh, I'm so awful. I'm so sorry. I'm such a terrible person. Nobody could ever forgive me. Like, it's just this like, you know, okay, hold on. Yeah. And so there's some sense where you like just communicating love and comfort is good and you can start there. But if it just turns into this, it's like, it continues no matter how much you try to communicate comfort and love and respect. You just kind of have to like move on from that. And similar to blame shifting, except instead of like an unhealthy focus on the external problems, it's an unhealthy focus on the internal problems. And you just move, you have to get over that.
How do you address that person though? Like that, you know, they basically use that as a defense mechanism to not address conflict, right? How do you, like, is it appropriate for that person to be like, no, I'm not going to let you do this. Like, you are not a sorry person. We've had this conversation, but we need to talk about this.
It's got to depend on the experience of that. Because, like, maybe someone, like, I've noticed that when we have these conversations, you kind of default to you're sorry and we don't actually deal with the actual issue.
And nothing changes.
That's really hard. That's got to be, like, a long-standing relationship.
Well, and that, now you're talking about a pattern of responses, right? Yep. So it's almost like... when you're getting to the point to have that conversation, that's the conversation you have. Like, if you start with the, like, hey, this thing happened that you offended me, and you address it as a content issue, then to get to the pattern issue in the middle of it, when they're already emotional, is going to be difficult, right?
So would you say that you, on your CPR thing, so content, pattern, relationship, should you work at the relationship first, then the pattern, then the content, or do you work from content, pattern, relationship? Or is there really any guide on that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the situation. Like, ideally, in your relationships, you can address the content as it comes up every time. As long as, if it's something you can overlook, by all means, overlook it, right? That is to your glory, if you can overlook it, right? But if you can't overlook it, if you're still thinking about it a couple days later, then, you know, you have to, it's stolen your peace. You've got to address it. So you address it. And often the sooner you address the content stuff, the better, because you keep the slate clean and you're at peace.
Yeah.
But you know, if you are at a place where you have a relationship issue with somebody, you can't trust them because of this ongoing pattern that they haven't addressed. It, like, talking about some minor content issue,
doesn't
make any sense, right? So the deeper the conflict is, you've got to address the deeper part.
It's almost as like content is like singular, pattern is multiplied, right? It's the content that is, it's a deeper level.
Yep.
So this is all, those kind of bends in the road, all kind of derail us a little bit from the final step is to find peace.
Yeah.
We're working towards finding solutions to help us find peace. And those are all ways in which we kind of try to avoid it and so on and so forth. But let me ask you this. How do you know if you have found peace in a relationship?
I think peace starts with you and God, right? Like, I think at some point, you know, the relationship, like, for a relationship to have peace can look so many different ways, right? Like, peace can mean you go back to what it was, right? That could be peace. It could be a change in the relationship. That could be peace. I think for me, when I'm looking for peace, it means a couple things. One, I can stand before God and be like, God, I did everything that you wanted me to, that I feel like your spirit led me to. And I looked at myself first and I addressed this in a healthy way. And the result is, in that relationship, I am not constantly thinking about it, hurt by it, burdened by it. Like, I can move on in this relationship with where it stands. And that doesn't always mean that that person in that relationship will agree with that piece, mm-hmm. right?
That's especially incredibly hard in family relationships.
Yes, it really is. In marriages, to be honest, peace is really hard to define, right? It really is. And I think sometimes, again, we are so good at self-deceiving, mm-hmm. right? I think we have to be careful that, like, sometimes we can convince ourselves we have peace when we really don't. And I don't think there's a magical, like, beautiful recipe
yeah.
to peace that, like, oh, hey, if you just include these mm-hmm. things, you get... This is a process. This is I'm going to walk humbly with God. I'm going to be sensitive to his spirit. I'm going to love that person more than I love myself at sometimes. And I'm going to do everything I can according to God's word to obtain that peace.
Yeah.
And that can look so different based off of the relationship.
And here's some ways that I know that I'm not at peace in a relationship. If I'm still thinking about the thing that they did, I said yep. this a couple minutes ago. If I'm still thinking about it days, weeks later, I'm not at peace anymore. Yep, right?
I shared last week the litmus test for me is when I think about it in the shower.
Yeah,
If it's disrupting the peace in the shower.
Yeah, or if I find myself acting differently in yeah. front of that person, my body language has changed, I'm, you know, like being passive aggressive or yep. I'm, you're
holding it against them.
Yeah, I'm using more sarcasm than is typical for me in that relationship. Like, I'm not at peace. Right. So you got to check yourself.
Other things are like you're still talking to other people about it. Mm-hmm. Right. You're still trying to explain it away. Right. Like I think a peace, like when you have peace, there's just this like this presence of God that's like, man, you're mm-hmm. at ease.
Yeah.
When I'm working really hard to justify not talking to somebody about something, I need to talk to them about it.
There's been a couple of situations, one in particular for me when. I was meeting with someone and they advised me like this, and this is my analogy that I took from their advice, is when nothing that I could do was going to resolve this cyclical dysfunction. Mm. So I would try and apologize, I would try and mend the relationship, but it was always somehow it would keep cycling round. And I've shared this with a number of people before, where sometimes you just kind of need to get out of the washing machine.
Yeah, mm.
That's the picture I have in my head, is that, and it's so easy, depending on the person, they want to suck you back into their vortex of dysfunction. And that, now that's really hard to do and make sense on your own. Now, this is with wise counsel that I wouldn't recommend. It's like, well, I'm just going to remove myself because that person's dysfunctional. That's actually you probably blame shifting. But when you have wise counsel being like, look, this seems to be like a repeating pattern. It's disrupting the relationship. And for you to actually have peace, you actually need to remove yourself from the relationship. And then what I notice is the cycle, the washing machine cycle just kept going, even without me in it. And I was like, oh, now I can actually have an element of peace. There were some boundaries set. Mm-hmm. But sometimes peace can come about in many different ways, and it's really hard to navigate.
I think that's what's beautiful about Matthew 18 is this process. And like, we didn't even look at the whole process. We're like, you know, at peace, you go to that person, it doesn't work out, you don't have peace. So you involve some other people, right? Like you still have peace.
I love the way you talked about that as a counselor or yeah, a therapist, it can be totally or a mediator pastor, or a wise community friend. Group. Yeah.
But then like, Matthew 18 goes to another step. He says, like, you take it before the church, the elders, right? And I think that's the beauty of God's church. Like, we talk about family a lot,
yeah.
right? And this is where mm-hmm. I think the family of God is so beautiful, where, like, I'm not just trying to find peace in my relationships. I'm trying to help Matt. Yeah. I'm trying to help Callum find peace in their relationships. Mm-hmm. And, like, the beauty of Matthew 18 is the church coming together to say, no, we want peace in your relationships, too.
Yeah.
And we'll help. We'll navigate. We'll tell you the truth when you can't see it for yourselves. And sometimes you need the elders. Like, we have elders in our church that we step in when there is a lack of peace in certain relationships.
You were sharing a story yesterday of, like, the elders you were gathering around, anointing someone with oil and praying over yeah. someone that was really, really struggling. And I love that about mm-hmm. the way God has designed us to live in community, to live
yeah.
under authority. And like, hopefully through this conversation, you've been able to get some helpful handholds, footholds for you to kind of navigate your own conflict. Mm-hmm. It sounds very smooth and easy for us to talk about it from a high level perspective. But as soon as the emotion and the stakes ramp up, the heat is on, it is so extremely hard. But hopefully being able to remember some of those four steps, and particularly to share your concern, how has it impacted you, ask for clarity and find your peace in relationship. I honestly just, I can't help but wonder if we were maturing Christians that could grab hold of conflict in a healthy way, how that would change the world. Because Jesus calls us, or he says that you'll know each other by how you love one another. And that's not just about how we care and tend to the needs of each other, but that's in conflict as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So hopefully this has been a helpful two-part series on conflict. Check out the one from last week where we talk about the self. But we're going to continue next week on our series By Design, where we're talking about the way God has designed relationships. And I would hopefully see you guys next week on the podcast. See you guys later.